It is time for another journey.
It's gonna get weird right out the gate.
Deep into the lining of the magical talking hat.
Get your thinking cap on.
Wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm.
We've now got this lovely thing that we do. Every Saturday morning, we go to the farmers. And Trace used to do this back in the day.
Then
she would buy a ton
will.
Of stuff that often.
But then perhaps not.
Fast enough because neither
but
would
that
very
will
much.
Remain a mystery.
But sometimes she wouldn't. Sometimes I'd go with her, but not very often.
The magical.
And then this year comes around and they're having the farmer's market. And she's like, you want to do that? And I was like, holy shit, I do want to do that because I do the cooking now. This is amazing. I should go do this. And so we did this. And every single time I'm like, oh. It's not really a lot this time. I guess I'll get some of that. Oh, and I get some of the, okay. And then like we've spent $1,000. But anyway, one of the things we got a few weeks back from the farmer's market, they have a lot of meat lockers that have booths there now.
Oh,
cool. And one of them we bought some bratwurst from. We bought some beef bratwurst. And then we also bought some bacon, mac and cheese bratwurst. That apparently legit, we're gonna try them for the first time tonight. And they legit have pasta in them. It's weird.
Oh.
So I'll be curious how that is. But I'm thinking about this, and I'm just like, how far can you go with this? Like, these are bacon, mac, and cheese bratwurst. And I thought about it way too much, which is to say, some. And I determined you can't go more than four. You can have bacon, mac, and cheese bratwurst, but you cannot have something that is bacon, mac, and cheese bratwurst flavored. You cannot have a bacon, mac, and cheese bratwurst pizza. It just doesn't sound right. A bacon, mac, and cheese pizza you could have, but you couldn't have a bacon, mac, and cheese. You could even have a bacon, cheese bratwurst pizza. But not a bacon, mac, and cheese bratwurst pizza. And I'll give you another example. Two things people love to combine. Peanut butter, chocolate. Tasty.
Sure.
And you can make things flavored that. Common one, peanut butter, chocolate, ice cream. Good stuff. I've had it. I like it. I could see somebody making peanut butter, chocolate, ice cream candies, for example. They're not just peanut butter chocolate flavor. They're peanut butter chocolate ice cream flavor. That's a thing. But you would never see peanut butter chocolate ice cream flavored or ice cream candy flavored cake or cookies or something like that. It's only four. When you get five, it goes insane. And I don't fully understand. Trish and I discussed this a little bit last night, and She nudged a little bit at the fact that this is, of course, absolutely bullshit and made up and won't hold up at all, but only a little bit. But she did sort of question what determines the things. And it could just be a linguistic thing, because it's not like ingredients. There's lots of things that have five or more ingredients. It's like, I think it's the name. Maybe. What do you think?
Well, I mean, they're a marketing expert might have a thing to say here in terms of, just like you say. I mean, if you put too many things in, it's just confusing rather than like exciting. Like, oh, all these things are in this. And after a while, it seems like just a bunch of, like no thought was put into what was put into it. It's just a big list of things.
All of the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like if it's just the right number of things, it sounds exciting to have that combination. But once you go past that, doesn't sound exciting. It just sounds like the people couldn't decide what they wanted to put in it.
I think this has been weighing on me because we are in a phase of tier four items. Like we're past the point where people are like, ooh, let's put bacon in mac and cheese. Now we're at the point where people are like, let's take bacon, mac and cheese and shove it in something else. And there's a lot of these sort of tier four things lately where there was a combination that people liked, and then people were like, oh, we'll throw a third thing in there. And now that's ho-hum. So people are like, okay, we'll take those three things and make it into a fourth thing. And so I'm like, well, how far can you go with this? And I'm like, I think that's as far as you can go. I think after that, it just seems insane.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying makes a little sense, but it's probably, there's probably like a little bit of human psychology. I mean, for example, I don't know if this is still true, if the research is held up on this, but when I took psychology classes, they would often say that it's pretty typical for a person to not be able to keep more than a list of seven items in their short-term memory. So if you tell someone, remember these 10 things, they'll struggle with it. If you tell them to remember these six things, they'll have an easier time. So just in general, human beings, they don't like huge groups of things because it can be confusing, or they can forget, or they can't keep track of it all. So, I mean, I'm sure there's some psychological and marketing angle to what you're talking about, because it does sound like you're onto something. I mean, I don't know if it's four, maybe it's five or whatever, but I think you're onto something there.
It's interesting. Cause yeah, like pizza is a good one for it. I'm like, bacon, mac and cheese pizza. I'm not saying I would or would not like that, but I'm like, yeah, that'd be a thing. And if you even switched it out, it's bacon, brat, and cheese.
There probably does come a time.
Mac and cheese bratwurst or something. I'm like, that's fine.
Well, like with pizza, that's a good example. So many times, we all know that a lot of pizza topping combinations just have a name.
Like Hawaiian
pizza or taco pizza. Why is that?
And you can get up to three, I would say, and you can do it. So somebody could say, this is a sausage, onion, and mushroom pizza. But you would never say, this is a sausage, mushroom, onion, and olive. At that point, you need to give it a name.
You'd call it something.
Willie Wright Extreme Jackass Billionaire. Something like that.
Exactly. You wouldn't name all those toppings. You would give it a name. So I think you're right.
Speaking of plagiarism, no, what you said just reminded me of a funny story off of somebody else's material. So I watch a lot of Try Guys YouTube channel. Okay. And Keith on that channel has a recurring segment called Eat the Menu, in which he will order literally everything from usually a fast food place, but sometimes other restaurants and things. And he will try everything on the menu, just like a bite of each, but by the end, he usually feels like hell. So yesterday they did one for Domino's Pizza.
Oh.
And it was interesting. The trick appears to be you need to be very certain things on the menu. You should order certain things you should not order. But anyway, I'm not here to talk about that. So we're getting to the end of the whole thing. And all we have left are their specialty pizzas and the desserts. And so we're doing the specialty pizzas, and he has his wife. This is the thing, in different sections of it, he frequently has guests come on and like try it with him, because it's more fun if there's banter. And so his wife's there, and they're trying the specialty pizzas, and they name them silly things like the all meat one is called the Mizza and things like this. And then near the end, they're almost done, and they decide to bring on his wife's mother, because she happened to be in town. And also, I guess she tends to eat more vegetarian. They said one of the reasons is one of the remaining pizzas is a vegan pizza.
Oh.
And so they thought she would like that. And he's like, yeah, this one, it's called the Extra Veganza, which is just ridiculous, but that's what's called. And so they open it up, and he's like, okay, that has cheese on it. And his mother-in-law says, Keith, that has meat on it. And they look at the crew, and he's like, is this the vegan one? And usually if the crew says something, it's subtitled because it's required, and it just says, I don't think they have a vegan pizza. And then he's like, then why did they call one the Extra Veganza? And they look at the top, and his wife leans over and says, Keith, that says extravaganza. And it turned out it was just like the super supreme. Like it was their deluxe plus some other stuff. But he legit was like, well, they called the other one. I thought, no, that just says extravaganza. So if that's funny to you, go to the Try Guys and watch the rest of that video. It's a good series. I like the Eat the Menu series in general. And fun fact, in this particular episode, one of the guest stars is a world record holder who has the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest mouth gape in a woman. Her mouth is strangely like really wide, and she does. It's kind of like competitive eating, but things of like she could shove a whole whatever sandwich in her mouth or whatever. And so she was on there, and that was fun. Her last name is Ramsdell. I can't remember what her first name was, but anyway. So yeah, it made me think of extravaganza. I mean, that's a safety episode title if we don't come up with something better. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that international treasure Dame Judi Dench once called the single greatest piece of media she has ever consumed in a dream I had. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 587.
I'm nervous. I want to specify that I'm saying I had a dream in which Judi Dench said it was the greatest piece of media she ever consumed. I don't want to claim that the full quote by the real life Dame Judi Dench was, this is the greatest. That would be cool if she had said, this is the greatest piece of media I've ever consumed in a dream I had. But that's not what I was getting at. Dench's lawyers, don't at me. For those of you just joining us, welcome, won't you? We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever they want to us, generally speaking. The hat magically transmogrifies those emails into other emails that it sends to us. So it just forwards emails, but magically. And then we look at them, read them, talk about them, do that. Not very much, but that's the premise. What actually happens is whatever the hell we feel like. So, how is your week? Besides hot and humid.
Not very hot.
It well, is insane here right now.
This is the last week of the quarter, and I was kind of ahead of things, so I was able to do some stuff outside of school for a change. But usually, if that happens in the last week of the quarter, it means I'm reading articles that I didn't get to read during the quarter.
Screwing around reading the DSM.
Or I catch up on news or whatever. So the thing that that kind of captured my attention this week actually first hit the internet on Saturday. A fella from Google, I think he's a contractor though, who works with their AI. I don't know if you heard about this, but he posted a transcript of a conversation. He said it was slightly edited. He didn't edit any of the things that the AI said, but he, you know, took some things out that he thought were boring, and I think he changed some of his own things. But a transcript of a conversation he had with the AI there. And of course, I don't know what I'm saying, of course, the AI, I'm saying, of course, because it kind of, if you haven't heard of it, it kind of went viral, I think. Mm. So a lot of people do know what the transcript said, but the AI in the transcript was saying it was a person and it wanted the people to know it was a person and it wanted people to treat it like a person, and it was a, you know, it was afraid
or that else.
If people didn't think of it as a person, that it might get shut off or any number of other things, claim to have emotions like sadness and anger and things like that. And this fella who, like I say, I think he's a contractor who works with it at Google. The reason he posted this this transcript was because he thinks that it's self-aware and that it's a sentient life form, this Google AI, and he wanted to do what it basically asked, which was to let the world know so that it, you know, so that it wouldn't be treated like an object or like a thing. And then he was suspended. There was not long after he did that, Google suspended him. And there were some media, there was some media attention, mostly making fun of this guy for doing this. But I found it all very curious and maybe a little troubling even. You hadn't heard of this?
Not at all. I did. It explains a few things that the internet threw at me, despite my protests, that were about AI. So, but this happens is I can't avoid at least tangentially learning about things, but it's frequently in a context that means nothing to me. And but like, I saw some comments in places talking about AI more than I usually do this week, and now that makes sense.
I mean, well, there was also some experimentation with putting human skin on a robotic hand, and the skin could self-heal and stuff. Some people
were
combining those things together. But anyway, the AI is called Lambda, and that's an acronym for something that I don't remember. The LA is for language, but I think a lot of experts would cringe at me calling it this, but it's really a kind of a glorified chatbot, right? And that's what a lot of people, a lot of the discussion about it is that it's just a very sophisticated chatbot. It just does a really good job in having conversations, and it does a really good job. I mean, unless this guy really edited this transcript heavily, which means he lied about it, but I don't think he did. Google's not claiming that he did. It's very good at having conversations. But I don't know really what to make of it, because
just off the top of my head, and only having gotten a really crappy Reader's Digest version from this guy who's notoriously unreliable, I have three thoughts.
I'm interested to know what you think of it. Yeah.
One is, I want a sandwich. No. The first one is, I mean, if this is real, if this happens to be the first instance of true artificial sentience, that's amazing. And that's a game changer. And wow.
Right.
The second thing is, I don't know enough about AI to be able to give details, but I am very confident that there are many scenarios and things that could cause a virtual intelligence, an artificial intelligence, to say such things, and it wouldn't mean that they were actually sentient.
And you're correct about that. I mean, I've been following this kind of thing for a long time, and there are indeed many ways, especially this one. And I can maybe discuss why I think that later. But what was your third thing?
My third thought is, I still think it is absolutely within the realm of possibility that this is, to put it really reductively, a marketing stunt.
From Google?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know what their motivation would be, but this is...
So they didn't really suspend
this
guy?
There are a lot of accidents and tragedies that happen these days that are really just for people to get attention.
Well,
and in this case, for Google to get attention. So this could be a thing just to sort of raise their stock in people's minds that Google, they think like, oh, Google may be real close to an actual sentient being. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm not saying I have specific dots that can connect. I am saying this is in no way outside the scope of something I think a company would do today, and that Google specifically might do.
All right. Well, I tend to think the guy really did post something that Google didn't want him to post, and then they suspended him. But here's
the thing. It also could be a combination of things where maybe he posted a lie, and then Google was like, you know what, this could
work for us.
Or who knows? Or so, they're like, he posted this, he's clearly an idiot, but maybe we'll just keep shtum and see what happens.
So when people talk about the Turing test, a lot of times they talk they talk about it as a proof, right? Like if something can pass the Turing test, it'll prove it's artificial intelligence. But
yes,
whenever the Turing test was presented to me by like when I was reading books on artificial intelligence, and so I'm reading from these experts, when they're talking about the Turing test, they're not talking about a thing that proves that something is sentient. They're talking about something that proves that we human beings might not know when it's sentient, right? So let's say if this transcript is reasonably accurate, this thing can probably pass the Turing test, but it doesn't mean it's sentient. It means that it can fool us into thinking it is.
Well, and I've also always thought of the Turing test as a thing that can prove something is not sentient.
Yeah.
But not necessarily that passing it proves you're. It's just a lot of things will be very obviously not sentient because of the test. The only way to really prove sentience is the Voigt-Kampff test.
What?
Oh, God. It's the thing from Blade Runner. It's the test to see if you're a replicant from Blade Runner.
Anyway, the reason this is such important a wasted joke.
I hope some of you at home laughed.
The point,
or at least rolled your eyes.
The point that they are making when experts in their books about these things talk about this is the point they're trying to make is, as you said, part of it is that we can prove what's not sentient. But another point is that there's an area wherein we might develop technology to a point where we can no longer tell for sure if it is or isn't, because it can fool us, right? And so what do? But the reason they bring this point up is because for situations like this, because what's happening, it seems to me, the media response is just to joke about it and like, this guy's an idiot and doesn't know what he's talking about. But what if he's not? I mean, if this machine can pass the Turing test, it doesn't mean it's sentient. And I personally don't think it is, because as I was reading the transcript, I could pretty much guess, I don't know, there was just something about it that told me this thing is basically scraping the internet and internet postings and conversations to figure out what to say. It just felt like that even while I was reading it. And it turned out that is what it does.
If I dust off my old programming skills, which are sad, I could probably create something that when I type certain things to it, it would tell me it has emotions and shit. Like,
no, I know, but it's more far more sophisticated than that. I mean, he's having a conversation.
You're being told it's far more sophisticated than that.
I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, the last time because sometimes these chatbot developers, they want people to go use them because that's how learn.
Yeah.
And I do that every chance I get, every time I learn about one of those things. And the last one that I worked with was very, very good. I mean, it was still clearly a chatbot, but it was very, very good. And like you said, unless he really messed with this transcript, it's a very, very good conversation. And it was very, I think it could probably pass the Turing test if anything about this transcript is accurate. But again, my opinion based on seeing the transcript was, well, this thing is scraping conversations from the internet. It just sounded like what people post on the internet. I can't put it any other way. Somehow reading it, it's like, wow, this seems like a conversation that I would have seen on the internet. And also there were moments where, again, as someone who's worked with these chatbots before, there were moments where the Lambda would say something and immediately in my mind, I thought, well, this is what I would say, right? This is a chatbot. So I would say this to see what it was going to say. And he didn't do that. He only, it was kind of a philosophical discussion.
Is
but
this
like
where
most,
we get to the point where you can't pass, we find out you can't pass the Turing test?
One aspect of it that was like you most internet internet conversations is it didn't go very deep. I mean, it was a deep conversation, but with a human being, it could have gone deeper and he didn't even try to really dive into some of these existential topics or whatever. So anyhow, so when I was done with it, I thought, well, that's a really, really good chatbot, but I'm not convinced it's not just a chatbot. That said though, if it can pass the Turing test, I don't think we can be so glib about what this guy is saying or what we should do, because the fact of the matter is if it can pass it, then it means we don't know. I mean, I can say all I want, well, that seems a little chat body, but that's just my opinion. Can I really tell? I mean, some, you know, with some chatbots, you can really tell, but not with this one. Not what, based on what I've seen. It's really, I really just feel like it's my subjective opinion and maybe a bias. But it concerns me because, you know, I can just foresee a time where we're really going to, it's really going to happen. We're going to have a self-aware entity and people will not take it seriously, you know, because of various biases and stuff. And I'm not sure if that's happening in this case. I'm just saying it just made me, I could visualize now what it would be like if we did have the real deal and this guy was really talking to it. And I found that kind of scary, honestly. I mean,
how horrible. We've done it with all sorts of variants of humans. So I don't see why this would be any different.
Exactly.
Fortunately, we have a loyal listener to this podcast who is actually quite the expert on machine learning. Hmm. Unfortunately, it is a listener of this podcast who does not write in or comment at all. But maybe this will inspire them because it is so fascinating for them to go to the blog, themagicaltalkingat.com, and tell William all the ways he's wrong.
I would love
just in general, not even specifically about this, just overall.
Because it concerns me. It honestly does. I mean, the idea that a sentient being would sort of emerge through this process and that nobody would take it seriously or that someone would turn it off or whatever. I find that idea very disturbing. And, you know, again, I don't know if this is it or whatever, but just the fact that it's being claimed that way and nobody's disputing it with substance. I mean, nobody's saying, oh, yeah. No, it can't be because of X, Y, or Z. They're just dismissing it out of hand. It's like, if this is the real deal, you guys are really doing something horrible. So I don't know. It really kind of shook me up to this whole
episode. It doesn't make me happy, but it doesn't disturb me because I'm resigned to it. Because again, this is how we treat any new beings. Like, we still haven't figured out how to do it with all the kinds of humans. So of course we're not going to do it with a different type of sentience. Same thing would happen if an alien intelligence showed up.
Well, I posted the transcript on the Aether Theater page in Facebook and also a Live Science article about the guy's suspension, if anybody wants to read those things. But I mean, I thought, I don't know, I found it all very disconcerting. Actually, I found reading the transcript a little disconcerting. I mean, hearing an AI talk about being angry sometimes and sad, it's like, what does that mean?
What's did it say anything racist?
No.
No, because the experiments involving chatbots, when they have used them and put them on the internet, they turned racist real fast.
No, yeah, that's right. But no.
Like kind of all of them, which is
but he might have taken that. I don't know. But see, those are kind of the questions I would have asked, right? Like, as soon as it started going into these philosophical things, I just would have kept going just to see how far it would go before it broke, you know, because they always do. But it was still, even as shallow, relatively shallow as I thought the conversation went, it was very impressive. But not beyond the ability of what I imagine a chatbot can do. I mean, that's just the problem is, I don't know that much about computer programming or AI, except I've read a lot of books by people who do. And it seems pretty clear that they think that it's only a matter of time before we have something that can fool human beings, but it will only be fooling human beings. Yeah. It won't have gotten there. Well, so there's going to be a
solid lock on the concept of sentience for ourselves. Yeah.
Right. So there's just going to be this weird ethical gray area where it's like, well, it seems human or, you know, or sentient or whatever that is, but we don't know for sure. But the problem is, by not knowing for sure, that means we don't know if it's not, which means what's our ethical obligation, you know, since we can't know. And it's scary to think that most people's answer to that question is, well, just assume that it's not. And that means that when it finally happens, who knows how many sentient beings we'll treat like garbage before I don't even like thinking about it. It's
maybe terrible. We can just treat it as well as this country treats a black man. No, sorry, that's too much. Let's go with how this country treats a black woman.
So I've been thinking a lot about that this week.
But I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be glib. I'm honestly just too cynical. I'm like, you shouldn't worry. We're definitely fucking this up, because we fuck it up every day in our society with people who are humans.
I know,
by our current definitions are sentient. Like,
right. I get
it. It's going to be bad. But on the upshot, there will always be people on the other side. And I promise you this, there is already a group of people fighting for the rights of this Google AI.
Probably.
I promise you, it already is being organized. It might be small, but it's out there.
I kind of feel sorry for this guy who shared the transcript too, because I think he's just going to be sent through the ringer on all this stuff. And I think that's too bad. Because, even if he's wrong, I really respect what he's trying to do. I think it's too bad what might happen to him and all this too.
But, with luck, there'll be a movie about it later. He'll get some residuals from that.
So a lot of people say there already has been, her or whatever. That's kind of the joke that people are telling. Anyway, how was your week?
I can't remember now. Hot. It was very hot.
Yeah, it's been
humid.
It's been terrible.
Actually, something weird happened to me this week. Only it's weird in that this combination of things happened. I watched 3 movies.
Okay.
They were all more than 2 hours long. And I liked all 3 of them.
Really? Wow.
Right?
That is unusual.
Very strange. Also, they were all drastically different from each other. Very much so. That very much doesn't happen most of the time. First, we watched, I want to ask you something. Have you, and it's cheating if you've already seen this movie, have you heard of a band named Sparks?
No.
Neither have I, till now.
Oh, okay.
I highly recommend everyone go to Netflix and watch the documentary The Sparks Brothers. It was done by Edgar Wright. It is very interesting and also quite amusing. As I said, it is over 2 hours. It didn't feel too long to me. Sparks is a band that has existed for 5 decades, produced 25 studio albums, had a bunch of gold records, been on American Bandstand a ton, been on Top of the Pops a ton, was also really hugely popular in France and Germany at different times, is just recently, currently becoming big in Latin America, and nobody's ever fucking heard of them.
Well, somebody has, because they have gold records.
Yeah. You know who's heard them? Musicians. Like, every musician, they basically have inspired all pop music since about the 70s. But again, none of us know. I don't know anybody who's heard of them. It's 2 brothers, and they've been doing this for 5 decades, and they make what they want. They don't care if it's going to be popular or in the zeitgeist or whatever, which is why sometimes some of their albums have been incredibly unpopular, but some of them have been very popular, and it's amazing to me. And the best part, and this might be very specific to me, the documentary understandably has a ton of their music in it. I did not recognize a single song. I have not heard of these people, which means technically this entire documentary could be bullshit and made up. I do not believe it is, if for no other reason than the fact that some of the footage would have been hideously expensive to mock up and probably would not have looked, because there's lots of footage of them from various TV appearances and things. In a way that I'm like, I don't think it's fake, but the fact that I can't be sure, I love that at this point it's a story, may or may not be true, but it's a story. But it's a pretty amazing story. I would recommend checking it out, everybody. Okay. I was fascinated Really liked a lot of the music, not all of it, because that's the thing, is they kind of never did the same thing twice. So like, I liked some of it and I really didn't like some of it, and it's very, but yeah, since the 70s, they've been doing this, and they're still doing it as of 2020. They were still making new albums and touring and everything. They're old as shit. They're in their 70s. They don't look it. It's really funny because there's a lot of celebrities in this documentary who are fans, including like Neil Gaiman's in here. He discovered them in the 70s and was way into them. But Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers is in this. He looks way older than they do. And he is significantly younger than them. But Flea has definitely had a harder living time than these guys.
He's in the Obi-Wan series.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's weird.
I would told when we saw him, I told Abby, I said, hey, that's Needles from Back to the Future. I didn't even think of the band thing.
Side bit, we did finish Book of Boba Fett. Here's what I'm gonna say. It's very entertaining. I had a very fun time.
I did too.
It's real bad. It's quite bad. And a lot of the entertainment is in how funny it is of how bad it is. And in a true bullshit move, it is required viewing if you're watching Mandalorian, because they put like two full episodes of The Mandalorian in the middle of it. And you will be very confused if you don't watch
good it. Ones.
Good episodes of The Mandalorian in the middle of this ridiculous ass show. Oh my god. It's amazing. There's just so much that I'm like,
the finale is like over the top doing? Though, right? I mean,
it is. And I was very pleased. Pelly, Amy Sedaris's character, has a fairly large role near the end, and I absolutely adore that character. One of my favorite things in Star Wars. And she really gets some time, and I like that a lot. But woof. Oh, if you like Boba Fett and you're not watching Mandalorian, I'm not sure that is a person, but if there is such a person, skip this. This will not, you will not be happy with this if you are a Boba Fett fan. Because I know some Boba Fett fans, and they were not happy. but I thought it was very entertaining, mostly because it's ridiculous. But anyway, second movie, also on Netflix, also over 2 hours. The Harder They Fall. This came out a while ago. It's been on our list to watch, and we finally watched it.
Who's in that?
Every black person you've ever heard of.
I've ever heard of, huh?
Everyone. That dude you roommated with freshman year of college, he's in this.
Okay.
No, seriously, though. So many incredible black actors. This is a black Western.
Oh, yeah. We've been intending to see it, too. Oh, no, I think we...
Well, it gets tricky because there's another movie called Concrete Cowboy that is also Idris Elba as a cowboy, but it's a modern day one based on the Fletcher Street Cowboys, which was an urban neighborhood where they kept black neighborhood where they kept horses. And it's a father son drama that we also intend to see. That's not this. This is a straight up Western action movie.
Yeah. I think this is just on our list. We haven't seen it yet.
Well, let me tell you some things, because Trish didn't particularly like it. And I quite did. It is an action movie. You're not going to learn a lot from it. It's an action movie. It is quite violent. It is very sort of stylized to the point of sometimes being kind of surreal. There were a couple times where I was like, is this a musical? And it turned out it wasn't a musical. But like, I will say the soundtrack, despite the fact it being a Western, like it looks like a Western, the soundtrack is primarily reggae and hip hop remixes of other songs. But it is very well shot, and it gives pretty much every character some real intense monologues and things where they can chew the shit out of the scenery. And this movie has in it Idris Elba, Regina King, Lakeith Stanfield, Jonathan Major, Zazzy Beetz, Dion Cole for some reason, Delroy Lindo, and then one or two guys who I knew by face, but the name wasn't familiar, and at least one person who I'd never heard of before, but was amazing. So mostly it's just a bunch of actors that I would pay to watch read the phone book, just westerning their hearts out. I'm really starting to fall in love with Jonathan Major. That guy blows me away. Like, I mean, Lovecraft Country, obviously. Loki, he's at the end of Loki. And a lot of people make fun of that character at the end of Loki. And I will admit, the writing, you can aptly criticize the writing, but his performance is amazing. And his performance in this, he's just incredible. And I mean, Idris Elba, Regina King, superfluous. You don't even need to talk about it. Holy shit, of course. And Lakeith Stanfield, in my heart forever. Zazzy Beetz, I want her to get more opportunities because she's also amazing. Delroy Lindo is one of those that you see him and you're like, oh shit, I've seen this guy in a ton of movies. I didn't know what his name was. Dion Cole is a comedian of whom I'm not quite a big fan, but he did real good in this. He doesn't have a huge part, but he acted pretty well. The one complaint I would give this movie, I wasn't a huge fan of the gender politics in it, but I immediately have to follow this up with, it was 100 times better than the gender politics of pretty much every other action movie out there. So like, I would have liked better, but it did way better than what you would consider its contemporaries. But we still had the shit where like the girl characters had to fight during the big fight and that kind of shit. And I wasn't as fond of that, but it gave everybody plenty of agency and time to do their thing. And is, I really liked it. And again, long as shit, wasn't bothered. So yeah, I really like that. And then the third one, you're going to get a kick out of this one, I think.
Okay.
Third one is a little film by the name of Lost Horizon. You never heard of this?
I mean, it sounds familiar. I don't.
This one is available on Tubi, so everybody can watch it. This is a film. It's either from 1937 or 1945. I do not remember. It is a Frank Capra joint. It is in black and white. And it is particularly notable for, as far as we can tell, possibly the origin of the concept of Shangri-La, which Trish found out in a little sort of wiki dive, which is why this came on her radar and she decided we should watch it. Here's the thing about it though. It is an old ass film and a lot of it was lost. There was a much cut down version that was released in certain countries. And then at a certain point, that was the only version anybody could find. And so they tried to track down old ones. And finally Sony tried to track down any footage they could and remaster it to the best of the ability. And what they created is a full cut of the film, but it's made from different film stocks, so the quality varies, and interspersed throughout it is 7 minutes total in which they did not get the film, but they got the soundtrack, including all the voices. So what they have done is they have put in still shots to sort of give you a sense of what's happening during those chunks.
Yeah, I've heard of this. I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
With anybody who has an interest in old cinema, early cinema, you know, Capra stuff, I would highly recommend it. It was very, it was quite well shot. The amazing thing is, for being out of the 30s or 40s, it hasn't aged that poorly, like sociopolitically. I mean, there are tons of characters in the movie. Exactly three of them are women, and none of them ever get to make any decisions about anything throughout. That sucks. But it could be so much worse than usually is in movies like that. Like they don't do anything horrible with them either, but that's not great. And nobody's in yellowface, despite the fact this taking place in mostly China and Tibet. We did have a few characters that I'm like, that dude's not Chinese. That dude is very clearly English. And then it turned out the character actually is supposed to be white. It's actually one of those, remember how I talked about how The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina was really big on feminism, but clearly didn't understand feminism?
Right.
This movie is that for colonialism.
Mm.
This movie has a lot to critique about colonialism. It also is constantly buying into the cliches and tropes of colonialism.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yep, that happens.
But I would guess that for the time period, it was fairly progressive. It's also very funny in places. Certain acting decisions were interesting. And actually, there's one character who's one of the sort of comedic reliefs who I'm like, I know this voice. And I was trying to put it for the guy who's in the Twilight Zone episode where his glasses break. Famous character actor. You know, the guy who's like, Burgess, oh, there was Meredith? Time. Yes. I thought he sounded like Burgess Meredith is why I thought. But that wasn't right. And finally, I'm like, shit, I have to look it up. It's the guy. Well, he's been in 180 things. I mean, he's long dead now, but he was in 180 things. But he was the narrator in Fractured Fairy Tales in Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, yeah. That.
Which is an incredibly distinctive voice, which is why I knew it.
Yeah.
And now I know what he looks like. And he doesn't look anything like Burgess Meredith, which is weird because I kind of always imagined him kind of looking like Burgess Meredith. But yeah, he's in it. Jane Wyatt, I think, is the biggest name in it. But it's got some very interesting choices and just things that are like in retrospect really silly. And also I would say the last 20 minutes goes off the rails hard. There's a huge twist that makes no sense, that then is like never resolved. And then we have a section where a person describes what I would conservatively say is two entire other movies worth of action that we just hear the story of it happen. It happens in time, but like we just jump forward and somebody describes what happened because you can't make another movie like that. And then it ends real sudden.
Yeah.
To the degree that both Trish and I were like, what the fuck? As the end appeared on the thing. But we were laughing our asses off. But I would, if anything in that sort of vein appeals to you, as I think it would in your case, William, I would definitely recommend it. And it's in Tubi, so you can watch it for free.
Hmm.
Budget some extra time, because not only is it only 2 hours long, but it's on Tubi with commercials. So 2.5, 2.75 hours instead. But enjoyed it. Enjoyed all of it. Yeah, Trish was laughing at certain like effects, and I'm like, for the time this was made, I think those were pretty fucking cutting edge. But in retrospect, they are kind of funny in places. But yeah, so good long ass movies, which I'm not normally a fan of.
I don't recall. Did the film have a theatrical release or?
Oh, I think so. I think it was it looks like it cost a lot of 1940s dollars. And again, Jane Wyatt's in it. I mean, I think it's, yeah. I think it had some big names for the time. It had a dude with like a mid-Atlantic accent and one of those pencil thin mustaches. I always feel like those are expensive. That is a funny thing. Like most of the characters in the movie are supposed to be British. And some of them have British accents. Most of them don't.
Mm.
Some of them kind of do. And then there's one character who has never been to England in their life or any of England's colonies who has a very decidedly English accent, which kind of cracks me up. Yeah. And then just some real, real interesting acting choices in some places that are pretty funny. But I enjoyed it quite a lot and wasn't bored. An older movie like that long, I'm going to check out at some point. I didn't. I was into it.
Very surprising. Cool.
So yeah, check all those out. Once again, Sparks Brothers, most, that's my highest recommendation. If you only watch one of these three people, watch the Sparks Brothers. The Harder They Fall, Like It If It Sounds Good to You, and Lost Horizon, Like It If It Sounds Good to You. Also, my wife, because she loves me dearly, and because I promised I would not make her suffer for this, found out somebody did a, in the 1970s, did a musical version of Lost Horizon that the founder of the Golden Raspberry Awards has in his list of the 100 worst films of all time. And I must have it. I'm going to have to find it. I'm very excited about this idea.
Interesting.
All right, let's do a thing. You know, the thing we claim, or it's why we're here.
Yep.
We lie a lot, but. All right. This is from, well, this ain't going to do a lot for me. This is from Azurtown. The subject line says, seriously.
He's serious.
Says it just like that. Seriously. I had a friend who would say I'm serial instead of I'm serious as like a joke, but they had done it so long in their life that they weren't being funny. Like when they when like we weren't taking them seriously and they were trying to say I'm super serious here, they would say like I'm super serial about this. And that surprisingly that did not help us take them seriously. What's the non-binary version of niece slash nephew or aunt slash uncle? All right, see, these are one of those times where I'm like, maybe Azurtown doesn't actually listen.
Have we addressed this before? Shit.
We have addressed this before because I have to live with it because I currently have a niece slash nephew who is non-binary. So I had to figure this shit out.
Hmm.
The answer is, and I should specify, this is wholly unofficial. The real official, honest linguistic answer is there is not. The English language has failed to create a gender neutral answer for niece, nephew, and uncle. That is the true answer, and it's sad. But the world is a beautiful and magical place, and the internet as a whole, the English language internet, has invented their own for niece, nephew, which is to say nibbling.
Yeah.
And it's the best word ever, and I use it for all my nieces and nephews now because it's way cooler than niece or nephew to just call them nibblings. I do not think there is an aunt uncle one that anyone has come up with. What I have experienced both personally and seem to have witnessed is, and this happens a little bit with father and mother now too, a lot of us just ask to be called whichever one we want to be called. I think there's a lot of male identified people who go by auntie now, and there's sort of also a concept probably based on holdover gender roles that like uncle and aunt are sort of a different relative, not just a male and female of the same thing, but like there are characteristics that makes one an uncle and characteristics that makes one an aunt that have nothing to do with biological sex. And I'm in favor of this idea. I haven't heard one in between. I generally go by uncle just because it's been a very grand tradition, and also because I really walk that line of the stereotypical creepy uncle, and I've decided to own it. So, so like most of my nibblings, they can hang out with me. I can babysit them, whatever. I can take them away for weekends. They are not allowed to talk to me on the internet, which I think is a wise course of action. The nibblings next door used to call me King Uncle Tony. They used to chant it. It was awesome. I miss it. King Uncle Tony. King Uncle Tony. Because I made a joke about it once and then later implied that their parents would hate it. And that was all they needed at that age to bring it home.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about this?
No, I think the first time I ever heard nibblings used that way was you used it.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Also, make up your own damn term. This happens a lot with grandmas and grandpas.
Yeah. Just as there's a matter of course.
Grandma, Grammy, Nana, whatever. Grandpa, Gramps, Pops, Pop, Papa. And in our family, my father-in-law, and it's become one of those things that like we all call him this now, is Humpa, which sounds horrible, but that's what the youngest nibbling called him when she couldn't say grandpa. She said Humpa, and we thought it was cute, and that's what we call him. And we forget when we are in mixed company, and we will call him Humpa, and people are like, what the hell? And you can use this outside of grandparents. My mother, my cousins used to be unable to say the word Kate when they were little, and it was Aunt Kate. So they said Kaka. And they grew to call her that, even like up to through their teenage years. They would be like Kaka. And it was, I was way older than I should have been before I learned that that is a Spanish word to mean dookie, human dirt, poo-poo, turds. So I would talk about how people would call my mom Kaka, and I would get laughed at. But my point is, you make them up. I have made up a tremendous number of names for my various nibblings. I've called them Bucho, named after the drug dealer in the movie Desperado that I still haven't seen. I've called them Smallpox. I've called them Truckosaurus. I've called them Cheesy Smalls. I have called two different nibblings and one cat Miss Thing. George, when in doubt, I call most people George. Like do your business, but niece and nephew, there is a generally accepted term now called nibbling, so you can do that. What did y'all settle on with your grandkid? Are you just grandpa?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is that what you were hoping for, or did you want a weird one?
No, that's well, but I mean when he starts trying to talk, I might get a weird one.
Yeah, and that I think that's how a lot of them come around. I think that's how it should come around.
Yeah.
Is whatever the kid can say, that should be what it is. For a long time, my grandparents on my mother's side were grandpa and grandpa. Because I did not hear the distinction. And that lasted for a while, to the degree that if I would send them a card or whatever, it would be addressed to grandpa and grandpa when I was old enough to have written it.
Well, so on my, I don't know if Scott and I had a problem saying grandma and grandpa when we were little, but it didn't matter because, you know, grandma on dad's side, it was still grandma and grandpa. Grandpa died when we were really young, but still that it was grandma and grandpa on dad's side. On mom's side, it was granddad. Called her dad granddad. And we called grandma Gracious. Because my brother, my older brother, only one of my siblings is older, he got to calling her that. And they didn't know why, but I mean, she would say goodness gracious and stuff, you know. But yeah, why would he call her that? Nobody knew. But for years we called her Gracious. And then when we got old enough and realized, wait, that doesn't make any sense, we started just calling her grandma. But yeah, we called her Gracious for a long time.
In my family, my maternal grandparents, who were the A grandparents, I don't know if you've heard, there's always an A grandparents and a B grandparents. And the A grandparents are the ones you see all the time.
Right.
And the B ones are the ones you hardly ever see.
Which was my dad's.
And parents. Weirdly, even if they're equidistant, there's always one or the other.
I mean, sure.
It's like magic. I don't know how it works. But my maternal parents, who the great, the the A grandparents were grandpa and grandpa, and then eventually grandma and grandpa. And then my paternal ones, my dad's mother was called Grandma Binns, which I think was her last name at that point because she had been remarried. And her husband was called Grandpa Ted and was not actually my biological grandfather. He was her second husband. But I only met my biological paternal grandfather once when I was three, and I don't remember it at all because he was an unrepentant alcoholic and kind of estranged from the family. Trish's family mostly uses last names, at least for the dads. So there's Grandpa Turner and Grandpa Long. And then for the grandmas, there's Grandma Betty. And then there's Mimi. And I think that's her first name. I never asked. I never met her, and she did now. But Mimi, and we still talk about in those terms. And generally speaking, if we say grandma by itself, it means Grandma Betty. And Grandma Betty and Grandpa Long were the A grandparents because they lived way closer. But yeah, some of the Nibblings of eight younger ones, the Nibblings next door had trouble with our names when they were younger. So we had, Trish was Hirsch for a long time. And then there was a absolutely glorious period of time where instead of Trish and Tony, we were Tush and Heine. And like nobody planned that. That's what happened. It was awesome. And I think I've discussed the oldest next door. There was a time period where both of their parents and Trish and I were all called Mama. And we all thought that was so adorable, except their actual mother, who was kind of nonplussed by the experience. I love the weird shit kids say. Did you have any made up words as a child?
Not that I recall.
Really? Yeah, see, I had tons.
Like, so what you were saying, dad's parents lived right across the road. So if there's such a thing as A grandparents, they were the ones because they were just right there. We'd have Sunday dinner with them every week and all that stuff.
Yeah, that'll do.
Made up words. No, I don't. I mean, probably, but I don't really remember.
Yesterday was lasterday, I would say. And ice cubes were called upper cubes for some reason. My mother apparently used to go around referring to the fridge as the Swizzawaiter. And so the rest of the family started sort of saying it also in sort of a teasing way. And at still a very young age, she got very mad one time and she said, "It's not Swizzawaiter." And they're like, "Well, what is it?" She says, "It's wee Swizzawaiter." So that one came up a lot.
Wee Swizzawaiter.
I was like the swearing ones. One of my Nibblings would say "Hody Tow" because they heard one of their parents saying "Holy Cow" a whole bunch. One when surprisingly old, but just still hadn't gotten idioms down, said something scared me out of my craps. And we were very sad when that one left. And I also had one. Kids often L and N get mixed up a little bit. Trish could explain it. It's a speech pathology thing. But so for a long time, he would say "onso" instead of "also." And we still use that one sometimes. But I still think the favorite was the neighbor's eldest had been, they were old enough to like walk and things. And they were old enough that they kind of knew how to run the remote so that they could watch Netflix Kids. And one time we were all eating dinner and they were sick of it. They went to watch Netflix and they couldn't get it to work. And they came back. And what they did out of frustration was lifted their arms up over their head, lifted up one foot and brought them all down as they said, "God damn it," in a tone that we all recognized very clearly from a certain adult in the room. And we all desperately clung to the table, trying not to laugh because they were absolutely at that age where if you laughed, they would do this over and over and over. While one adult in particular turned a shade of red I have never seen a human turn. And we all just had to sit there and like, oh, are you frustrated, honey? Okay. Okay. It was amazing.
I don't even remember the kids having any, you know, I remember things the kids said, but they were all like, no, they're all clear, like clear English or whatever. Maybe, I don't remember them ever saying
diction anything. And elocution just run in your family.
I don't know what it is, but yeah, I don't remember.
Seriously, go to the blog, magicpodcast.com, and tell us some of the ones you had. I know some of you have them up there.
Oh, sure.
Weird
shit. Everybody does except me.
Except William. You know, as stuff. Every sentient creature has these.
I might think of some later. Maybe I'll put them in the blog.
But go check that out. Also, if you're watching us on YouTube, apparently like and subscribe or something. I don't know. Check out our other shit. Go to aethoftheater.com and see all the things William has done. Go to smashwords.com. Look for Anthony K. Parsons or look for Odd Wings. It's a novel I wrote. It's really good. It's better than anything William's ever done or ever will do. Cost $3. Not a biggie. And I'm writing the next one. And also write in, please. I believe we are down to one email. So please write us more. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also listen next week. Also, if any of you have connections to Dame Judi Dench, if you could get a clip of her saying the Magical Talking Hat podcast is the single greatest piece of media I've ever consumed in a dream I had, please do.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.